This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Live off the record with Chicago Lang is sponsored by Burger King, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, Royal Star Assurance, and BTC.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. On this beautiful Monday afternoon, I trust and hope that you had a great weekend, enjoyed yourself, got some relaxation, and feeling quite refreshed, ready for the week. So much going on in our world. So much going on in our world today. If you want to give us a call at all, then the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316 or 325-4259. That's 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. We are, of course, live on Cable Bahamas, channel 969. That's the way my mother listens to the show. Or you can catch us on BTC Flow channel 612. That's BTC Flow channel 612. Firstly, let me express heartfelt condolences to the people of Haiti on the tragedy of the earthquake that has now killed hundreds, and one does not yet know just how high that death toll has risen. Many more have been hurt and much damage caused by that earthquake. Something we're told was felt as close to home as in Agua. I don't know that that is true, but that's what we're told. But it was a massive earthquake. I've been in an earthquake. I traveled to Japan in 1995, I believe it was. And about 5 days after I arrived in Japan, I was laying down in my room. And this would have been early in the morning, I think around 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. The bed started swinging from side to side, swinging side to side. Being as I was from the Bahamas, you know, I started thinking that the demons and stuff are occupying the place. So I started rebuking demons, you know. But I realized, I said, you know what, this is an earthquake. And so I dashed under the desk in the room, which is what they say you're supposed to do in case something falls on you. Hopefully the desk will help. That happened for what seemed like a lifetime, but it didn't last but some seconds. And afterward, we learned that thousands and thousands of people had died in that earthquake. And we could see the physical damage to a brand new building, the JICA Center, where we were staying. And there were many who had not been ever exposed to an earthquake, like myself, who were just horrified. And many people, I was going, that was 5 days of what was to be a 3-month journey for me. And many people left, and I was going to leave, but I didn't. Stayed there for the entire time. And I didn't experience any earthquakes after that. But it is something to experience, that for sure. So our condolences to the people of Haiti in this once again, a tragic situation for them. Similarly, on the withdrawal of the United States from Afghanistan, some 20 years after it went in pursuit of those who had been responsible for the terrorist attacks of 9/11, 2001, that withdrawal has created upheaval in Afghanistan, as now the Taliban, a group of religious zealots who believe in, you know, they have a much stricter religious code to which they subscribe in respect of how they think their society ought to run, and who at one point had come into some power in Afghanistan only to be uprooted later on, displaced in the wake of the American entry into Afghanistan following September 11, 2001. And now the same Taliban is now reoccupying, retaking Afghanistan, has now taken the capital, the president has fled. And I all of us ought to be concerned, because whatever may transpire in the wake of the instability in that region can have an impact on our own circumstances in the country, particularly as the United States is oftentimes a target for the venom of groups such as that who feel like it has introduced undesirable and unwelcomed influences in their region amongst their people. And so that is something that has to be watched. The President of the United States, Mr. Joe Biden, will be speaking this afternoon on it, as I suspect he must, because this withdrawal has left a huge gap and created a significant challenge, not just for the United States, China and Russia and others, even though Russia had itself invaded Afghanistan, and, you know, Afghanistan has been one of the territories in which they and the Americans have kind of had these dual influences. Now, in that instability, in the wake of that instability, that creates tremendous geopolitical challenges for the world. So we'll have to see. It is something. A war that America has been fighting for some 20 years. If you listen to the experts, without any claim that it has been victorious in doing so. Some people try to figure out why. Why could not America, with the most powerful army the world has ever seen, why could it not be victorious in a place like Afghanistan? But, you know, some people say there are many things, but one of the things it has to do with the fact that when you look at the Taliban and their soldiers, they are committed not by virtue of money or things. They are committed by virtue of their religious beliefs. And some people say that creates an enormous persistence and dedication and devotion, such that people are prepared to die for what they believe, where others might not do so. And you saw Afghan soldiers trained by the Americans just kind of up and abandoned their post following the withdrawal of the Americans. Why? Some say they're not committed, dedicated, as are these folks who are prepared to die for their cause. So it's something we'll be watching, because it does create enormous concerns, especially in a world already destabilized by far too many other issues, not least of which is this global pandemic which we are fighting. And so we'll be watching it for sure. You might, just as a matter of notice, you know, some people might wonder, because if you lived in, if you just came into your own in the last 20 years, you might think that Afghanistan was always that way, but Afghanistan was not always that way. In fact, Afghanistan used to be one of the quieter, more peaceful countries in the world. Very quiet and peaceful. And really lived that way until communist attempts to infiltrate that country and causing other wars and upheavals in the place. But it used to be quite a stable and civil country, and not so much the case now. Anyways, our regards to the people of that region and hopes for the best. Some time ago on this show, when we were discussing our challenges with the COVID pandemic and the need for greater vaccination and why people were hesitant and reluctant and so forth, one of the things that I mentioned was that the government ought to seek out additional types of vaccines to at least eliminate the concerns that some people might have had in taking the AstraZeneca, where they may not have had the same concerns in taking Pfizer or Moderna or Johnson & Johnson, so that in the variety of those offerings, there would be less hesitance by people whose reluctance was tied particularly to one of the vaccines. Well, it seems the government has sought to answer that question and to fill that gap, because now we are going to have available Pfizer and Moderna and soon Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca, so that people can have their choices of vaccines to take if, in fact, they are interested to take the vaccines. There continues to be a significant amount of reluctance on the part of people with respect to the vaccines. We will know soon how much of that is tied to choice, and choice as in the available types of vaccines, because once all of them are here, we'll know whether the people who have been saying that they don't want to take AstraZeneca will then come and take the Pfizer or other things, right? We'll know that soon. But in my conversations with people, and my viewing of messages in chat groups, etc., there continues to be an enormous amount of reluctance in respect of these vaccines, and persistent reluctance. And I mean, we now have armchair specialists in terms of what vaccines are or are not, what they do or do not do, and it is just incredible to me that people who have only by way of reading, Google searching, etc., where you can get lots of information, no doubt about that. You can get lots of information that way. You can become quite informed that way. But I would dare say that there has to be some caution in that, in trying to suggest almost that there is sufficiency of expertise in that kind of information gathering to provide wholesome commentary on these things. Anyways, so that persists. So while the supply of the vaccines will be greatly increased, and I have no doubt, because I have seen it already, that the uptake of the vaccine will also increase. It has increased even before now. There's no question about that, right? And I expect that it will be uptaken even further. It is left to wonder to what extent that uptake will increase whether it'll be sufficient to cause larger numbers of people to take the vaccine, sufficient numbers of people to take the vaccines to calm the storm of COVID. Because there are lots of people who don't believe it will. Without evidence, I might add, without any evidence, I might add. And recently, during the press conference that was conducted by Dr. Dal Regis and those, they showed a startling graphic. Startling. I mean, it really wasn't startling to me based on the information that I had had. But it showed that if you look at hospitalizations in the country today from COVID, if you look at the hospitalizations of the, and this was as of the 31st of July of this year, of the 411 people hospitalized, 411 people hospitalized, 400 of those people were unvaccinated, had no vaccinated, no dose at all. 400. That is a percentage equivalent to 97.3236097%. 97% of the people hospitalized, unvaccinated. Of those partially vaccinated, 11 of those in the hospital were partially vaccinated. That's 2.67639907.03%. Of those fully vaccinated in the hospital, of the 411 hospitalized today, I'm basing this on the information shared at the press conference by the government, by the consultative committee on vaccination, 0% of the people in hospital are fully vaccinated. Does that mean that people who are fully vaccinated can't get COVID? No, it doesn't mean that. So far as we can tell, the breakthrough rate for fully vaccinated people is around 2-4%. Where I've seen it in Israel, 2-something%, and other places, 2%. I've never seen anything higher than 7%. There are breakthroughs. We know that. But in terms of hospitalizations, all around the world, wherever you go, the rates of hospitalizations of fully vaccinated people, very, very low. So we certainly have data to suggest that vaccination as a means of preventing or reducing or minimizing hospitalizations is effective, right? Real live data. Then when the deaths in the last period of March 14th to July 31st of this year, 53 people died of COVID, according to the statistic. And of those persons who died, none were fully vaccinated. None were fully vaccinated. One person was partially vaccinated, and the other 52 persons of the 53 persons, all of them were unvaccinated. That is a 98.11320755%. So what we are observing, as is being observed elsewhere in the world, is the undebatable reality that these vaccines or not vaccines or some kind of tool have the ability to greatly reduce hospitalizations and death from those with COVID. Incidentally, I saw a study that looked at studies that were looking at the transmissibility of COVID by people who were fully vaccinated also. And what it was able, this was a rapid study conducted by a number of researchers from a number of different places. This was a BMJ Yale review, literature review. Now, what literature review does is they look at the studies and what the studies say. So they do a brief of the various studies. So I just read you the abstract. It says the objective of this is an update of a previous report that examined literature published up to March 11, 2021. 16 additional studies have been included in this update. So this update has 33 studies that were reviewed. The objective of this report is to identify comparative observational studies and randomized controlled trials evaluating the efficacy and effectiveness of COVID-19 vaccination in reducing forward transmission from vaccinated people, and studies examining the biological plausibility of vaccination-induced transmission reduction. That's the aim. And they describe their methods in doing it. And these are the results. These are the results of the review. In this update, 16 additional studies, including 9 human and 7 animal studies, were included. Therefore, this review examines a total of 33 included studies, 21 human studies, and 12 preclinical animal studies. Evidence from 2 large household surveillance studies from the UK suggests that a single or full dose of AstraZeneca and Pfizer BioNTech vaccines may prevent household transmission of COVID-19 after 14 days of vaccination up to 54%. The AZ vaccine trials in the general population suggest that an initial low dose followed by a standard dose may provide up to 59% protection against asymptomatic or unknown infection, although efficacy against these outcomes was not demonstrated following 2 standard doses. The Pfizer vaccine observational studies in the general population suggest, listen to this, up to 90% effectiveness against asymptomatic infection after 7 or more days of full dose vaccination. Up to 75% effectiveness against asymptomatic infection was reported after full dose in healthcare workers. Across RCTs examining asymptomatic infection in the general population, 1 dose of Moderna was shown to provide an efficacy of 61.4% against asymptomatic infection 21 days after the first dose. In another trial, the J&J, Johnson & Johnson vaccine, had an efficacy of 74% 28 days after the first dose. Lastly, 7 of the 8 studies found significantly increased cycle threshold suggestive of lower viral load in Pfizer or AstraZeneca vaccinated individuals compared with those who were unvaccinated. long and short of it is, even if not perfect, there is considerably reduced effectiveness in the real world, reduction in transmission of COVID on the part of vaccinated persons. That's the long and short of that. So now we have more vaccines. I have had people contact me about vaccination who in the past had expressed some challenges about it and who are now looking to do so. So that's a sign that maybe the variety or maybe the sufficiency of information is now causing folk to reevaluate the risk of taking the vaccine. And so I expect that there's going to be an uptake. The extent of that uptake, I do not know where it will go, but we will see. From all of the information that I have, these vaccines represent our best bet at putting a check on this COVID-19 spread and intrusion into the health systems of our countries. And so now, with availability, we will see the extent to which some of that hesitancy was reflective of availability. My hope is that the government will allow systems administrative persons to develop, design, and execute a systems efficient and effective protocols, set of protocols to enable and ensure easy and smooth access to the vaccines so that we can get those people who are interested to be vaccinated, vaccinated. Those who are not interested or who are opposed, it's nothing really you can do saving and except they change their minds. God bless them. No problem. Hopefully, we'll have a sufficient number of people take the vaccine to reduce as much as we can transmissibility and illnesses, severe illnesses, and deaths, as we have seen so far today. So, there you go. More vaccines are here. And thanks to the United States of America, for sure, for stepping up to the plate and making available significant doses of this vaccine to our countries. We must be grateful. I mean, naturally, the United States of America is looking out for its interest in these things that it does, as it should, as the Bahamas should. But and it also impacts positively our interests. And so we're grateful for that, thankful for that. And now, hopefully, is this going to be a panacea, or some people say panacea? Is this going to be a fix it all for the Bahamas? Even if we get 70, 80% of people vaccinated? No, not fix all. My view is that it will significantly influence the trajectory of this spread and give us a chance, I believe, to fight back the onslaught that is taking place in our healthcare system. Our doctors and our nurses and the clinical staff and all the folks that serve, they are doing yeoman's work. Yeoman's work. They have done yeoman's work. Okay? They have, on the front line, battled and done yeoman's work. Now, My understanding is that 50% of them have not taken the vaccine. I would honestly like to know. I'd like to know from them. And if you are out there, you don't say your name or anything. I'd love to know why you have not. If you're a medical, if you're a healthcare worker, if you're a nurse, a doctor, I'd really love to know what it is that causes you not to. Is it that you've been too busy serving? Is it that you have some concerns about this? I'd love to hear, because I think that is a real telling, metric, measure, that 50% of our healthcare workers are not vaccinated. When that let me explain to you what that means to me. That means that the leadership of the country, the leadership of the healthcare organizations, that means that the global information distribution and discussions have not been able to convince people who are themselves battling in many instances with the people who have contracted COVID, that they aren't convinced that they need to do this. And that's very interesting to me. I'd like to really find out what their thinking is. Now, it would be useful to know how many of them represent, and I don't know if this is actually not the case. When we say healthcare workers, do we mean those who are engaged by the public sector? Is that what we're saying? That those people who are employed by the public sector are not, 50% of them are not vaccinated? Are we saying when we look for or look at all of the people who are vaccinated in the medical profession, public and private, 50% of them are not vaccinated? I am not sure that the information I saw made that distinction. But it would be interesting to know what are some of the reasons that these healthcare, because you know, you have to think that if nurses and doctors and other people who work in the healthcare profession and saying, listen, I'm not getting that vaccine, I'm not getting vaccinated, that must be quite influential on ordinary souls who are themselves unsure. So it'd be interesting to find out. Live, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Summer is heating up, and Burger King Nassau is bringing the flavor. Introducing our all-new take on a classic chicken sandwich, the Barbecue Swiss Crispy King. Our new sandwich is full of smoky and tangy flavor and features our crispy chicken patty with tangy chipotle sauce, onion rings, bacon, Swiss cheese, lettuce, and tomato, plus a smoky barbecue sauce on a soft potato bun. The new Barbecue Swiss Crispy King chicken sandwich with fries and a Pepsi is a summer treat you will love to eat, but only available for a limited time, and only at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Sheila, you okay? I see smoke coming from your window.
Child, we most burning down the house frying chicken.
Your kitchen is a mess. You have insurance?
If I have insurance, I pulled my phone out, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and in no time, I was on live chat with RSA rep, sent pics of the damage, filed my claim on the spot.
Wow, I don't think my insurance got that kind of...
You got to go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails. and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas.
For design,
unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speeds starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or btcbahamas.com. Conditions apply.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, to take a stand, Everybody, come take my hand, We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever way.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon, where we're talking about the COVID vaccine high increase in the country, and what it could mean for our situation. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to give us a call on 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Listen to me, guys. Now, you can't text me a essay of messages, because this can be a little challenging to read an essay of messages, okay? So this text is great show as usual, Mr. Lang. Before people call and text about the pandemic and the earthquake, I have a question. How and also will the Taliban taking over Afghanistan cause another world war? Also, will it affect international travel for us in the Bahamas going to the USA and to the UK? We talked about that a little bit earlier, and as to whether it will do all those things, you know, one can predict that, but certainly instability in that region has the possibility of some global disruption if it gets bad enough. So also pertaining to the topic in the earthquake, I think some of the fault lines run through the Bahamas, so we could also have an earthquake, and also earthquake in Haiti could trigger a tsunami. Okay, we have some additional text here. This text says, Mr. Lang, I'm glad Trump is calling for Biden to resign over this Afghanistan crisis. Biden didn't follow Trump's well-executed plan to pull out. He should resign. Biden didn't follow Trump's well-executed plan to pull out. Okay. Why don't you do something for us? Why don't you text to me, please, or give me the link to Mr. Trump's well-executed plan to pull out? Liz Cheney, a senator in the United States of America, recently said that Biden bears some blame for that 100%. And she said, but Donald Trump and Pompeo share a great deal of the blame for it. But you now are saying that the problem is Biden didn't follow Mr. Trump's well-executed, mind you, an executed plan is a plan that's already been done. So you're contradicting yourself a bit by talking about an executed plan, because a plan executed is executed. You could say it's drawn up plan, but maybe you can send us a link to it since you've seen it and you know that it's a well executed one. It says, on another note, Mr. Lang, I wanted to know if you ever advocated or even floated the idea of a Congress within the Bahamas or requested increased power for senators to initiate investigations for MPs and the executive branch while you were in office or when you exited office. Are you in support of an ombudsman? No, I did not call for the Bahamas to have a Congress. The Bahamas doesn't need to have a Congress to do investigations of members of parliament. We have an ethics committee. They just need to, we have a committee of prerogative, privilege, sorry. You can do any number of investigations. If our parliament wants to establish committees for investigating anything, the parliament is sovereign. It can do that. So I'm sorry, you don't need a Congress to do that. I have absolutely support an ombudsman in the country. Absolutely. Since I'm amazed to see that less than 1% of the number of people hospitalized were vaccinated. I'm also amazed to see that 0.013 of the population, less than 1%, have died. If we are making a case that diminutive numbers translate into success, then the theory should remain constant regarding the death rate of the virus. And you are saying that in the population of the vaccinated, the number of people who are higher or the same as the people who are unvaccinated? Brother, sister, please come again. You can't find any support for that. Okay, I'm sorry, man, whatsoever. The text says, good afternoon, sir. I have not texted in a while. I still consider you a considerable mentor. I was on the fence with the vaccine, but now the Pfizer is available here in the Bahamas. I will sign up at 3 p.m. this afternoon, changing my original time. No AstraZeneca, Pfizer on the weekend at Bahama. There you go. Okay, so that's one person who, for whom we know the issue was the type available to take. So that's one person. Okay, it'd be great to hear from some of the healthcare people, professionals, and see what is holding them back from doing so. Be really, really interesting to know. I don't know how to look at the numbers that are published, not my numbers, because you could discredit my numbers if I gave you numbers. But look at the numbers, and unless you don't trust the source, and that's always possible, you don't trust the source, but the numbers are clear. If somebody comes and tries to argue with me or you, these COVID vaccines prevent COVID, I would tell them that is not true. Not perfectly, not even close to perfectly. I would tell them that's not true. Why? Because the published numbers don't reflect that. And that's why we have this thing called breakthrough. Where did the concept of breakthrough infections come? Came from the scientists who are observing that there are fully vaccinated people who have contracted COVID. I know personally of some people in that category. So no one can come to me and say, oh, these vaccines prevent COVID. Can't do that. No one can say to me that, no, these vaccines don't cause any side effects and nobody will ever get harmed or die from the vaccine. You can't tell me that either, because I know better. I know better. So I'm not having that argument with anybody. No one can come to me and say to me that, well, a person who has COVID and is fully vaccinated can't transmit that to somebody else. Can't tell me that. You can't persuade me of that. Just as you can't persuade me that you can get the malaria vaccine, the polio vaccine, and these other vaccines, and you can never get ill or harm or hurt from them. I can't believe that either, because I have information to the contrary. Right? So I can't believe that. But based on the published information, you can't come to me and tell me, one, these vaccines don't considerably help. Two, that they don't considerably reduce hospitalizations. And three, they considerably reduce deaths from COVID. You can't convince me of that, because I have got too much information to the contrary. Okay, it's not possible to convince me of that. That's why I would advocate and promote it amongst the people who are prepared to listen. I can't do anything about someone who's, you know, not prepared to listen, who has their own information that convinced them otherwise. I can't do anything about that. And so, you know, I've spent some time arguing with people about it. And honestly, I sometimes regret that I've done so, because I really, you know, at the end of the day, not sure that's really productive or worth the while. But, you know, but the numbers are there to speak clearly that we are and can be assisted. And maybe that's why there is such a global thrust to get the vaccines. I mean, all these folks, these very brilliant now Google searchers, with all their facts and figures, the global community is on a vaccine tear. That's what they are in, trying to get vaccinated, seeking to get vaccinated. And notwithstanding all the information, people keep putting out all these videos, all these articles, all this to the contrary, things keeps rolling. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason for that. The reason is that the body of evidence seems very clear on what these vaccines can do to help. Now, there are folks who will come and argue, oh, we don't know, this is only a trial, the FDA hasn't approved. You know, not my words, but some of the experts that I've listened to, they said, listen, man, we have the data. We have the data. We have enough data. They have words. When you have vaccinated hundreds of millions of people and you have been able to observe in the real world the impact of that, you have data. What the FDA is doing, that's just a matter of course, they say. There's data. And that's what I rely on. That's what I'm relying on. And I relied on it to the extent of the people closest to me, including myself, and being vaccinated to both protect and myself and others around us. Not too long recently, a friend of one of my kids the mother, the parent, said to me, I didn't know this, I really didn't know, said, you know, 9 days ago my husband died from COVID. 9 days ago this day from COVID. Left 3 kids and a wife. 9 days ago. Listening to Z-Live, I'm Shabab Alain, your host. We're going to take a break for news. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We'll be back after the news break. Take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever way.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text us on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. You know, I cannot understand how it could be shocking that your enemies, your opponents, could so quickly take over a place you live when you gave them notice that you were leaving for over a year. You and I have been listening to Mr. Trump say that he went out of Afghanistan. It became a great debate, lots of talk back and forth. This was over a year ago. So you're the Taliban listening to this conviction, this resolve on the part of the U.S. government that you're going to leave. And you're going to sit around and not plan for what it means when a huge military force like the United States of America pulls out, that you, unless there was an overestimation of the extent of readiness of the trained Afghan forces to be able to fight back the Taliban. But they had a year. They had a year. Mr. Biden, when he came in, indicated that he was going to follow through on it. For months, he's been in since January. Anyways, so recently, the government of the Bahamas ran into an issue of disclosure of beneficial ownership of companies that were contracted by the government to do work in the pandemic using International Monetary Fund loan proceeds. The issue was brought about by someone indicating that this failure to provide the names of beneficial owners had taken place. And by the government's own admission, there is a compliance issue with the loan. By the government's own admission, because the Attorney General of the country is proposing to amend the Bahamas Beneficial Ownership, the Bahamas Beneficial Ownership Act, to allow the Ministry of Finance to come into compliance. So that's clearly an issue that a feature of the loan terms needs to be fulfilled by the disclosure of the beneficial ownership. So first of all, let me say, clearly the government seems to be suggesting that it is not willing not to disclose the beneficial ownership. It makes the claim that the Ministry of Finance doesn't have the authority to do so because it did not apparently indicate to those individuals who have these or had these contracts that they would be disclosing their names, and therefore the individuals may be prepared to sue the government for breach of confidentiality. Now, let me try to come at this from a public policy point of view. Right? First of all, let me start with the government first, and then I'm gonna go on to the contractors. Let's start with the government first. You're the government of the Bahamas. You are a trustee. You work on behalf of someone's. Those someone's are called collectively the people of the Bahamas. The business conducted by the government of the Bahamas is their business, the people's business. Let's be clear on that. Nothing that is done by the government of the Bahamas is private business, meaning that it is a business for which the public is not entitled to information. Okay. I mean, we may not have had compelling laws to make the government disclose any information, but the general principle of good governance, which has as underlying principles transparency and accountability, are principles that say clearly that the business conducted by the government is the people's business and therefore is a business to which the people are entitled in terms of information because it's their business. And that largely the only thing that has tended to trump that disclosure principle is national security interest. Meaning, because nothing matters if the people are not safe and protected. So information that could compromise the people's safety and protection can be kept from the people if in doing so, you're protecting the people from being harmed or injured, okay, by it. Other than that, the people are entitled to to information. So a government is expected to be two things. Transparent. Transparent means I make it possible I am doing. That's transparency. Now you may not have seen me do it, but if necessary, I can make it possible for you to see what I'm doing. That's one of the reasons why it is typical when the government makes a decision, you make an announcement, you put it in the press. That's one of the reasons why there are rules that require things to be published in the official gazette, because it is a principle of transparency. Who did you hire? Put it in the gazette. What did you do? Put it in the newspaper. That's one of the principles. Disclose it before parliament. Table it before parliament. There's laws. Report on education. Report on the public health hospitals authority. Report on the taxes. So forth and so forth. Because the principle is the conduct of public business is the people's business. Therefore, the people are entitled to the information regarding their business. So that's the first principle, transparency. The second principle is accountability. Accountability says, not only must I be willing for you to see what I need to give a reason to you for what I have done. You may not agree with it, but I have to be willing to say, here is why I gave so-and-so this contract. Here's why we did this project, so forth and so forth. Again, you may not agree with it, but I'm prepared to do that because this is a... These are features of good governance. So the basic principle is there really is no information that the government has that arises from its conduct of people's business, the public's business, that it should be unwilling to share with the public. Saving and accept that which constitutes national security interest. That's the only basic exception in that regard. Now, there are lots of things the government will do you won't know, but there's nothing the government will be able to know. Even national security matters can be deemed confidential, and although after a while, you can release it because now the danger may have passed, and there should be a willingness to do that. So even cabinet conclusions and all them kind of things, which are typically confidential, after a while, there's nothing wrong. It's people's business, right? So that's the basic principle. Now, so if you give a government contract to somebody, there is no circumstance in which you can justify that who got that contract, as in who are the beneficial owners of the companies that may have gotten that contract, should and cannot be disclosed. No circumstance. I mean, like what circumstance could there be? Now, if the government says, and I'm not talking about the minister administration, any government says, well, we didn't know. You didn't know? Okay, let me see here now. I served in cabinet for 10 non-consecutive years. That means that basically every Tuesday God sent, saving except I was on vacation or traveling on official business, I was in the cabinet of the Bahamas every Tuesday. And when I served, if a contract was $50,000, that contract had to go to the tenders board. Now, the tenders board sounds like a technical committee, but in point of fact, it's not. The tenders board is the cabinet of the Bahamas or a subgrouping of it. Now, there's a group of technicians that represents the kind of technical tenders board, but that contract is coming to the cabinet of the Bahamas. Now, let me give you a number of reasons why it is inconceivable that a contract being issued by the government of the Bahamas, that the people who are actually the beneficial owners of the companies that may get that contract will be known to the government. First, on pure governance grounds, it is inconceivable that a government would not know to whom it's giving a contract because, one, it has policies that connect that only Bahamians should get certain kinds of work in the country, and then foreigners may get other kinds of work. So you want to know, am I giving this to a Bahamian versus a foreigner? Period, because that's in line with my policies and our laws. Secondly, you want to know, well, who are these people? Am I giving it to a criminal? Am I giving it to a terrorist? Am I giving it to a traitor? Who am I giving it to? So you want to know for those kinds of very basic reasons. You have to know your customer or your contractor, right? Thirdly, on political grounds, let me be real with y'all for a moment now. Let me be real with you. There isn't a possible chance that a government of the Bahamas ran by a political party doesn't have an interest in knowing the politics of who is getting a government contract. That doesn't mean give the contract to somebody who's an opponent, but they are going to know and want to know when that is done. So just for sheer practical reasons, that's going to happen. You're going to know that. Because the last thing you want to do is, okay, somebody won a contract who is a huge supporter of your opponents. And your party, your folks in the community find out, start a big upheaval. And all of a sudden, you shocked. You didn't know that? Oh, you want to know that. So it is not conceivable that the government of the Bahamas doesn't know who the beneficial owners are of all the contracts that were given under the pandemic IMF funding. Not possible. Now, the issue of disclosing it and not being able to do so because the Ministry of Finance may be handicapped in doing it because of a law? Okay. I am prepared to concede a little bit of it because I don't know the details of the law itself. But let me tell you, right? Let me tell you. If you're a contractor, and you are going to do public business. You're going to get a contract from the government. Well, listen to me. You would be really naive. Government isn't going to or may need to disclose your information, especially if a government is telling you it's going to have a Freedom of Information Act enacted and passed and executed. That would be really foolish. Public business? You're getting taxpayer money and you think there's a possibility that you could slide under the radar and get a government contract? that's quite naive to me. I'd like you to sue me on that. Imagine you're the government of the Bahamas. You're a political party. And a contractor says, I'm going to sue you if you tell people who I am. Okay. Imagine how that looks to the public. You think that looks bad? It doesn't look bad. The public said, oh, my government wants to be transparent, and this contractor don't want the government to say who he is? I'd welcome that fight. Mind you, again, if there are legal and contractual obligations that prevent the government from doing so, that could be the case, even though the government would have to rectify a circumstance like that. I think that any government contract should have a provision that says your being awarded a government contract means that you can and likely will be disclosed to the public of the Bahamas. Because if you're a political party, which fight would you rather have? Would you rather have to fight a scenario in which the public perceives that you are unwilling to tell them with whom you got a contract? Or would you rather have a fight against a contractor for having disclosed information to the public as to the award of that contract, even if you are one of my political supporters, that people can say, okay, but he only get it because he's one of those fights would you rather have, that you am willing to disclose, or that you disclosed, but yes, this is one of my close supporters. First of all, let me tell you, you can be a purist all you want, right? You could be a political purist all you want to pretend that governments of the Bahamas, parties, political parties in the Bahamas, do not give contracts to people who are close to them. You could pretend that. You are. The PLP, the FNM have done it. Sometimes it's been controversial. Sometimes members of parliament who are on the side of the government have gotten contracts. Sometimes the close relatives of a member of parliament may have. So we are not without a history. Some big supporters, chairmen of parties and other operatives or functionaries for political parties have gotten significant contracts. We know that. We live in a small country. That's almost unavoidable, quite frankly. That's almost unavoidable. Right? So that has happened. You can get in that fight. You can have that fight. You're going to have that fight. But is that a easier fight to have than I'm not going to disclose, or there's difficulty in disclosing? Which one of those things creates the most headaches? I would dare say that a government that appears not to want to or suggest it is disclose beneficial ownership would have a much more difficult time with people having to deal with them. So the public policy interest in the country is always on the side of disclosure, greater disclosure, not lesser disclosure. And it ought to be the expectation of both the government and the contractors that their business with the government is going to be public business, and there may be disclosure. We oftentimes know the value of these contracts. They tell you that. They might tell you, okay, well, so-and-so got the contract, as in the company got the contract. And, you know, it isn't usual that we say, somebody will say that, okay, well, so-and-so limited got the company and so-and-so limited is owned by. Don't typically do that. That has not been the typical thing. So nobody should be running around pretending like this is typical, right? That's not true. That's not true. Not under the Pinlin, Ingram, Minnis, Christie administration. We typically, if a company applies for a contract in its name as in a limited company, unless that company has the name attached to the owner, you typically do not get to hear, by the way, can I say that so-and-so construction is owned by him, him, and him? Generally speaking, only because in this society we may know so-and-so owns that company or so-and-so owns this company, we tend to put two and two together and say, okay, that is who got the contract. But other than that, let us not pretend in the history of the Bahamas that it has been typical for a award of contract to be issued and for somebody to walk up there and say, oh, by the way, the beneficial owners are him, and him. Generally speaking, even when there's a signing, only the principal may come. So maybe the chief and principal owner of the company might show up to do the signing or their attorneys. But even then, just because the principal shows up doesn't mean you know, well, you know, she owned a little piece and he owned a little piece and they owned a little piece. You don't know that. And nobody ever tells you that. Ever has it been done, typically. So we to some degree, there's a little bit of new rules making for some of this for the government, for some of this, you know. Now, mind you, the obligation it has is a scenario because never in the history of the Bahamas have we borrowed from the IMF or the World Bank. Never. This is the first time. So this situation is unique to that extent. But outside of that, it has not been difficult for any signing for you to hear anybody say, oh, you know, by the way, five people own so-and-so limited, and they include XL and GB and CH and those one and so forth and so forth. No one has typically done that. But a government must be willing, if pressed and required, to disclose these things. But if it has contractual or legal prohibitions, then that's a different story. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. I think some of the Afghanistan people are in with the Taliban because it does not appear that any preparation or resistance was made. And they knew the U.S. was moving their troops out. Mr. Lang, I know it is politics, but when the PLP is in power, they never tell you anything, but they try to build all kinds of problems for the party in power. They need to stop their foolishness because I just told you, you know, that could be in some of this. And you know, I'm just trying to help you understand how the public policy principles and concepts work. All right. Now, the Attorney General has indicated that the government, in pursuit of compliance, is seeking to amend the Robo Act. Now, you will may recall that under pressure from the OECD and those, the Bahamas has created a registry of beneficial owners, and that is where you get the Robo Act from. Registry Registry of Beneficial Owners, that's Robo. That's where you get that act from. And that act, what happens is any company in the Bahamas incorporated, domestic or international, has their beneficial ownership deposited in that registry. So once a company is formed or changes beneficial ownership in any way, there is a requirement to report that to the agent of the company. This may be a law firm or some, or the registry itself, so that the registry could lodge that beneficial ownership in the registry. So in the Bahamas, almost 50,000 or so could be companies. The beneficial ownership of those companies are registered in a registry in the Bahamas. So it's known. Now, that information isn't generally liberally disclosed. It's only disclosed under predefined investigative or judicial circumstances in which the AG's office may get a request and so forth. And then, so it's generally the people in that registry feel at ease about their confidentiality, because there's room for that. Just because I own a company doesn't mean I want everybody in the world to know that I own it. That doesn't have to be. I mean, I'm entitled to confidentiality. I'm not doing any business with you. I'm not doing any business with the public. I incorporated a company to do my own private business. I don't have to have you know that I have the company. So that's not a requirement. So some of you all check yourselves first if you start to think that's the case. It's not the case. There's a space and place for confidentiality, even in your life, right? And my life. We all want things to be confidential because we could do it to protect ourselves, because people knowing we are the owners of a significant company, we may become targets, our children may become targets. Those kinds of things are legitimate concerns that people could have. Now, once you decide to do business with the public, you enter in a different sphere where your confidentiality may be curbed by the need for the public to know. So you got to bear that in mind. But the AG is suggesting an amendment to this act to allow for beneficial ownership to be seen by the Ministry of Finance through the robo, through the registry. The law to say in circumstances where you have an international obligation requiring that disclosure, that thing can be done. When we come back from the break, I'm going to talk to you about why I think that's a problem. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Line, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Marsh the car. The lady run into me, Marsh the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas.
For just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speed starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or btcbahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. If you want to call us, give us a call at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. You can also text me on 422-4796. So we're talking about the CAFU. The noise that was created about the beneficial ownership disclosure of the funds that were received from the IMF for the pandemic, $250 million. Question is, who were the beneficial owners of the companies that got contracts for those? The government of the Bahamas has contracted billions and billions of dollars over the years. And I guarantee if you do the search, you'll find that in very few cases, I can't recall too many, has the government ever disclosed the beneficial ownership of the companies that were awarded those contracts. Now, in any number of instances, we knew who they were, at least a major base, because we knew the players' association with the company. But in as a general rule, we didn't typically know who those all those beneficial owners may have been. So the Attorney General is seeking to help the government to be in compliance with the provision of the IMF loan terms. Now, firstly, let me say to you, so that you don't miss the point, the Attorney General is saying, we are trying to do what is necessary to let you know, to do the disclosure. So this is not an instance in which the effort is to hide who the people are. What is being pursued is to reveal who the people are. Okay? So that's the what's happening. But I think touching the Robo Act to make that possible can have an unintended consequence. Notwithstanding that the Attorney General and those may define the circumstances around which a disclosure could be made from Robo, the fact is that two things will be observed by people who have their information registered with Robo. One, they'll see that, okay, you mean that if a circumstance that is politically challenging enough for the government, that it may be prepared to touch this thing. Now, lots of people might have no issues with that. Some people may, one doesn't know. Secondly, you have a circumstance in which the government's definition of the circumstances under which a thing may be done could always be the subject of legal dispute, in which then now ever broader and broader coverage could be made to it, because this is the nature of law, that you can have these liberal interpretations and all you gotta do is go to court and you know the court can rule. So we often say in public policy making is that if there is a way to end that has less risk or unintended consequences than another way, use the other way, right? I mean, use that way. Use the way that has less unintended consequences and less risk, right? That's the general rule. Now, so why would it not be possible to put the provision that is being sought in the procurement legislation, since this is a feature and factor of procurement? You procured a loan from the IMF, it required a disclosure in relation to procurement of services from contractors, then put the provision in the Procurement Act. It could be argued that time is of the essence and you're trying to bring about the disclosure. You have to go to Parliament to make amendments to the Procurement Act, et cetera. Okay, fine. But I would tell the public of the Bahamas, listen, I tell you, it is better to wait to go that route, and let the governing again back to Parliament, to go that route, because the government can get unanimous consent to go back on the agenda to achieve an end. It's possible. You could pass it. You could do so if you need to. And you think to going back in a way that allows expeditious amendment to achieve this end, and they're the ones who call him for the disclosure. So I think it's possible. So I think the alternatives to doing this, because I think it could have unintended consequences for the financial services sector and this business in the country generally. And so we'll have to see. That's just my 5 cents on the matter. All right. In any event, the basic rule and the principle is that a government conducting public business ought to be willing to share information with the public as is requested of the public, because there's no private business conducted by the government. You might, in the process of conducting your business, be privately or confidential, right? Because if you are negotiating a contract, you may not want to be out there talking about all the terms of the contract and revealing all the terms of the contract, because that can affect patients. But when you have done a piece of business on behalf of the public, you certainly want to be able to have the public get access to that information, because it is, after all, their business. I noticed that Mr. Cooper, the deputy leader of the Progressive Liberal Party, was questioning whether any term of the loan was violated. And I'm not entirely sure why he would raise that question, because the government, by virtue of the disclosure by the Attorney General, is saying that there is a provision of the loan, which is a term of the loan, that requires this disclosure, and that's why they are going to make the amendment so that they can comply. Now, the term of the loan may, you know, the IMF has not, to my knowledge, come and say you are in breach of our loan terms, blah, 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 blah. Was there a time limit on a disclosure? So Mr. Cooper was asking for the loan terms itself. Well, when, you know, we're debating the resolution to get this loan, nobody asked for the terms of the loan. The whole $250 million of the Bahamas, by virtue of a resolution in Parliament, and nobody asked, hey, you're borrowing this money. Could I see the terms of the loan so that we can know whether we should approve this resolution? It would be interesting to know who voted and how they voted on this resolution. Meaning that you gave the government permission to borrow money and you ain't look at the terms. That's not typical anyways, right? It's not typical for members of parliament to say, can I see the terms of the loan for that syndicated loan that you are borrowing this $900 million? We don't typically do that. But I'm saying, in the aftermath now of this issue, you are now going to say, we'd like to see the loan terms, when the matter was before the parliament and the loan terms was not saying, but the resolution was voted on to borrow the money? and other than that, disclosure provision, what else terms of the loan could there be? In fact, could there be more dangerous terms in the loan that could cause other breaches? And you don't know? We don't know? You don't know because you didn't ask to see it then? Because typically these loans are about what's the interest rate, what's the life of the loan, very typically standard kinds of things. This is not a IMF program where you would definitely want to see all the details of what the obligations of the government were, because this is not a loan, this is not an IMF loan program. This was a special emergency pandemic program that was being put forward, right? And so I don't think this issue of breach of terms is any matter of grave challenge, saving and except for the government doesn't do the necessary to fulfill the disclosure provision. Other than that, you can pay your loan term, pay it on time, pay the interest rates, and all is good with the IMF, right? It's, you know, you don't want to be in default. The IMF couldn't come in and swoop in and do anything to you if you were in default. But I mean, you don't want to be in default because that would affect your credibility in the international financial community. But I think it's a little bit of color stuff at work in dealing with the matter, you know. I don't think that much other than the political perception will arise from this. Now, once the disclosure is made, that could be another matter. Let me say that. So, won't you be surprised that there may be some F&M supporters who have gotten contracts under these loans, as they have under other loans? Would you have been surprised that PLP supporters would have gotten loans or contracts under the Christie administration? Would you have been shocked about that? Would you have been stunned that the Ingram administration would have had loans extended to supporters of the F&M? Would you have been? We already know some of those controversies. Would you have been surprised that under the Pindling administration, that PLP, significant PLPs, would have gotten contracts? Would you have been surprised? Really? In the Bahamas? Really? Now, when we alter our procurement rules, some of that may change. Some of that may change, but altogether? Let me tell you something. Business people in Bahamas, especially the ones that have to do business with government, there was a time when the Port Authority, when Edward St. George and Jack Haywood on election day would say, "Did we win? Did we win?" When they knew they couldn't lose. They couldn't lose because one covered one side of the political spectrum and the other one covered the other side of the political spectrum. Business people in the Bahamas ain't stupid. They have leanings. They have biases. They have particular people that they certainly support. But they spread their support sufficiently for you to know, listen, we have to be prepared to do business with whoever is in business. Some of them have on their boards and in their mix and in their ownership people of significant political persuasion from all sides. They got the full thing covered. And they do that as a matter of strategy. So sometimes when you run around going, oh, they gave that thing to their one, you stay right there. Stay right there. Because do you know who owns all the company? Do you know all the people who have shares? Really, do you? Do you know who's holding nominee share for who? I'm just trying to tell you, man. I don't want you to be naive, especially in a small country. You see, because we think the Bahamas has 489,000 people. Well, of the 489,000 people, 300,000 of them you could remove right away from ownership of any colony. Half of them are children. Can't even do it because they're not even 18 yet. The millennials, most, I didn't say none, but most don't own any companies, any shares in any companies. So 300,000 you can wipe away right away. At least 89,000. You think 89,000 people own shares in companies in this country? Maybe thousands and thousands through public ownership of publicly traded companies. But the vast majority of companies are very closely held family-owned property, entities. And sometimes those families make strategic decisions. I'm going to give 5% to so-and-so, so that if we have to talk to the people, then we can send so-and-so because they ain't no tingy. I'm just saying. So the government ought to be always mindful and willing and prepared to do these disclosures. And I would say, you know, the Minister Administration And if Ms. Team wins the Brave administration, they ought to all be careful. Because the standards to which you hold others, you will be held. That's what happens, right? So you in opposition and you make these claims and you try to erect the standard, just remember, if you win, your time will come. Ask the Minister's administration if that's not so. Ask them if it's not so. Same thing. So both sides, all sides, ought to be committed to the principle of transparency and accountability. Not just in language, but be committed to it indeed. And I can tell you that it's not easy for political operatives. It's not easy. It's not easy. It's not easy for the reasons why we don't have finance disclosure laws in our election campaigns now. Because there are lots of people who give to political parties who have no interest in people knowing who they are. None whatsoever. They do not. And they will tell you that. It's not only that the politicians don't want to tell you who they get monies from. The people may not want that to happen, sometimes for good reasons. Right? So, in the end, my hope is, my real genuine hope is that the government will not resort to the robo act to pursue this disclosure. That's my genuine hope. I'm serious. My genuine hope is that they leave that alone and go. Like for instance, right? Let's suppose you are right. Let's suppose you are right in thinking they give contracts to people close to them. Let's suppose you are right about that. If you are now on fire because people think you did these things in secret and you are now prepared to go ahead and make the disclosure, why don't you go to the same people if they're close to you and say, listen, man, we need all this fire. I need to tell people who we gave these contracts to and let them give you permission. And you can go ahead and disclose it. If they support you and they want you to not be in the fire. Am I dreaming? Sometimes that's what it takes. Anyway, we take this final break, pay our respects to our sponsors, and when we come back, we wrap up. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabago Lang, your host.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand.
Enjoy an elevated mobile experience with BTC giving you
unlimited talk for the best conversations,
unlimited data for all your online fun,
and unlimited roaming to stay connected while overseas.
For just $50 per line.
Unlock unlimited mobile talk, data, and roaming when you sign up for BTC Superfast Fiber Internet with speeds starting at 100 megabits per second. Enjoy more great savings and value. Upgrade or sign up today. Visit any BTC store or btcbahamas.com. Conditions apply.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
I mash the car. The lady run into me mash the car.
I hope she had insurance.
If she had insurance, she hop out, pull out her phone, pull up the Royal Star Assurance app, and bang, she was on a video call with an RSA rep, sending pictures of her damage, my damage, filing a claim on the spot.
For real? Our insurance have that kind of app?
You gotta go to RSA for that.
Download the RSA app today or visit rsabahamas.com to submit your claim online. Live chat available weekdays 9 to 5.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh new quality.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody. Come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together.
storm, whatever weather, cold or warm, letting you know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. So glad you could join us for these last remaining moments of the show. Let me in finally talking about the disclosures that people may be seeking in respect to beneficial ownership, say this. The laws are necessary to provide standards and boundaries and limits on conduct of both the private sector, the public, and the government. So they're necessary. But let me be clear for those who call for law. Clear. Laws are minimal standards for achieving high aims of integrity. Minimal standards. Okay? Minimal. Because you can pass laws and sitting and accept that they have any meaningful value in terms of enforcement and or punishment for breach, I mean, the whole lot. Let me give you an example. Many laws in our country require that a government ministry or department produces annual reports. Many. And I can guarantee you that any number of those ministries or departments have not done so, and have done so without any consequences to flow from them. Why? Because in the law itself, there really ain't no consequence. So laws are minimal standards. You know where the highest standard of compliance with matters of trust, integrity, and confidence comes? It comes from within. It comes from the commitment of the people who have responsibility for carrying out public business. That's why a public servant, that is a political directorate and or a civil servant, all of them have the necessity of personal ethical convictions that exceed the legislation and the mandates that are given to them through the legislation. Let me say it again. There is a requirement that their personal moral and ethical obligations, convictions, are higher than the standards set for them in the legislation that mandate they have such standards. That's the most robust way to get the level of transparency, accountability, integrity, trust, and confidence in the people who serve the public or even the people who serve in private. There's no other way. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Z Live. I'm Chivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us today. Listen, Nahaja Black is up next. Stay tuned. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
I'm not afraid. If you are afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand.
See Live off the record, Burger King, Royal Fidelity Bank and Trust, WorldStar Assurance, and DTC.
If you feel like you've been